Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another book
and a chat with me, Barry.
Get up in the morning, second thing you do, put on the kettle, make a little brew, eyes that'll do you. Tickety boo. See you, Jimmy, don't you agree? Only one thing better than a nice cup of tea, and that'll be two. Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in the morning, or in the afternoon, or in the evening too. Cheer yourself up, pour yourself a cup, tickety-boo.
Good evening, one and all. It's Thursday, it's 6:30 here on the eastern coast where I am anyway, and this is me, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, my guest today, I guess he writes, could be said he writes suspense books, because he kept me in suspense because I didn't think he was going to turn up, and then about 15 seconds before the start, he turned up. So I'm going to introduce him straight away. Today my guest is the one and only Sam Hilliard. Hi Sam, how are you doing? No, he's gone. I guess that could have been him, but it sounded like a bit of a bad line, to say the least. It's either that or he was being eaten by some sort of giant slug at the time. Anyway, as I said, my original guest today was Ann Putnam, but she had to pull out because I think she's flying somewhere or other today. And I had another guest whose show I had to sort of slip in somewhere, and that was Sam Hilliard. And hopefully he got the information about coming on the show today. And hopefully this is him back again. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, I'm glad you finally got here, mate, I tell you.
apologize for my tardiness.
That's okay, no problem. At least you're here, that's the important thing. One of the things that I want to start off first is you come on this show, obviously, to talk about your book, The Last Track. But I want to go back to the early days, because one of the things I read about you was you had a bit of an interesting start to the world in the form of being baptized just a few times. Looks like we lost him again. I guess he's having a bit of trouble with his phone or the connection or something like that. But anyway, while we're waiting for Sam to come back, and I want to ask him that question because he had a bit of an interesting start and he's had a bit of an interesting life, to tell you the truth. But I'll tell you about what's happening on Saturday while waiting for him, because I've got one of my debut authors, one of my tenors, 2K10s, whichever group they are, half of them are both, you know, the debut authors for 2010. And that is Kitty Keswick. We're talking about her book, Frigsville. Now, I actually met Kitty when I went down into London for the BEA, and then afterwards I went back, I don't know, somewhere, La Rochelle or something like that, near there anyway, to meet the tenors, meet the group of them, and I met Kitty there. And it's very interesting, yeah, talking to her and about her book and stuff like that. I'm really looking forward to having a chat with her on the show. Because her book is, well, it's like sort of vampire romance stuff. And when you see the book and the pages, it bites out of the stuff. So I guess that gives it a bit away what's happening. Waiting still for Sam to get back. I guess he's in a sort of a weird area where the phone doesn't work. So we can carry on talking about him behind his back. I mean, after all, that's what he's here for. He's written this book. And I guess it's the first in a series. Because it's called, you know, he actually sort of calls it that, so I guess it is. And actually reading through, I do see that he's sort of working on another book. And it's one of these, I guess, detective books, isn't it? Thriller. A thriller writer, that's what I call him. And the book is called The Last Track. And it's taken him a few years to get around to doing this, and it's been some interesting years along the way. And he has got a second book coming out in this series, The Hero. is Mike Brody. So if you like, it's in the Mike Brody series, and I think that's what he does actually say. So yeah, the book's there, and I guess I'm going to have to start talking about him if he doesn't come back. Yeah, it's one of these things. Yeah, we've had people calling in from all over the place, as listeners know. We've had people on the side of the roads pulled in. We've had halfway up mountains. We've had people from Russia. We've had people from, you know, some outback farm, no, miles away from anywhere. We had somebody in a restaurant, wasn't it? We had and all sorts of things. I mean, it's all part and parcel of the fun, people dialing into these things. But so what we'll do is we'll start talking about Sam and his book. Well, the book, as he says, you just imagine, you know, when you're young, you go in the woods and you think, okay, you could get lost in these woods, you know, down the track and stuff like that. What would happen if people go in there and disappear forever, never to be seen again? And this happens. The last track is a police detective. They got this missing body and stuff like that. And the police actually recruit this Mike Brody, who is the hero of the book and the series, to help find an asthmatic boy lost in the dense woods surrounding a dude ranch in Montana. An unwitting murder witness, the boy burrows ever deeper into the rugged terrain, fearful of being found. As Mike and the local officer search for the boy, the killers follow them. While the investigation expands, Mike's ex-wife, well-connected journalist, uses her contacts to unravel the truth behind the murder. Her discoveries threaten to snare them all in a treacherous conspiracy. Pretty good stuff to me. Okay, let's see if we got Mike back, Sam back again. Hi, Sam. Are you there this time?
I am, and hopefully for good.
Okay. I've just been telling the people a little bit about your book and that, but I want to go back, as I said before we lost you, because you've had a pretty interesting life. And right from the start, I think it was you were actually baptized quite a few times.
Sorry about that. My father was the original procrastinator, and everybody was pretty much convinced that between his daredevil driving and his procrastination that I would never make it to down the aisle, as it were, in swaddling clothes. So a number of relatives actually did, I guess there's these emergency baptisms you can perform in certain sects of the Christian church, and they didn't consult with each other, but years later, they compared notes, and it turned out that I think four different family members had baptized me one time or another for the official one.
Yeah, I mean, that's making sure, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, they had it done.
And I mean, this was in the 70s, and that was a pretty interesting time, to say the least, through the 70s. So, and you must have, you know, when you grew up, you seemed to be traveling all over the places in your years.
I did, yeah. My parents had one of those jobs, well, my dad first, and then my mom. They had the kind of job where you just needed to move around a lot. So I kind of got used to just saying goodbye to people as kind of a matter of course. If we were somewhere 2 years, it was kind of a record, you know. So it, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I guess that, I guess at least you can say you saw the country, which is more than a lot of Americans seem not to be able to do.
Yeah, I've been on both coasts and the Midwest and a little bit of the South, not too much. It definitely has an impact on, influences what I do today and who I am and the way I'm able to kind of approach situations as the outsider. And, you know, there's a tendency to kind of remain an outsider, I guess, as it were, which the writing definitely helps with that.
Right. I mean, and did you sort of do any writing when you were growing up, or was it, you know, were you just sending letters because you moved on to the next place? Yeah.
It happened, I think, pretty organically, and I kind of fell into it towards the end of high school. I used to write little stories now and again, but I didn't think much of it. And then I had a couple of teachers in high school who were very. One in particular was very encouraging, and kind of pushed me into thinking about writing in a little bit different way and gave me, you know, additional assignments. And then once I got to college, I don't know exactly what, if it was just being completely broke and not having any, you know, any money and, you know, wanting to do something, but I kind of stumbled across it as a cheap activity. And then I fell away from it later through my marriage for various reasons. I just didn't make it a priority. But I've come full circle and I'm back into it now.
Yeah, I mean, your early years at college, and a person after my own heart, you know, you just go there, you do a little bit of music, drink some beer, write a few things, drink a few more pints, you know. I can relate to that.
It was more than a few pints, but.
I know. But you got to make it sound like we weren't in a permanent drunken state, you know.
Yes, of course. We were the picture of sobriety.
You're right. Yeah, it's just the odd party, you know, when it happened. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
As you say, you went full circle, and then you found yourself back in, you know, like almost like a study dorm again in an apartment. And then I guess you thought, well, okay, let's start writing.
Well, actually, I should back up a second because I left one important thing out. What basically happened was I was at a job that I really didn't care for. It was just a bad fit for my personality and the skill set that I brought to it and what they were looking to do with the position and kind of how I thought it needed to be done were it diametrically opposed. And I had been on the outs with the owner and my boss for some time. And 3 days after my honeymoon, I, depending on who you talk to, I either got fired or I got laid off. I don't know which version you want to go for. But, and, you know, my ex-wife at the time said, well, you know, you haven't been really happy doing what you're doing for a while, and why don't you try writing, you know, while you're looking for work and in between, like, consulting assignments. So that's the actual impetus. It was, you know, being out of work, I guess.
I can understand that. I mean, yeah, it helps pass the time of day, you know. And was
yep.
this this when you were suffering and living in New Jersey?
I'm still in New Jersey. Yes, I've been here. Actually, I've been in Jersey the longest of any place, and I've been in this particular apartment for quite some time now, which is a record. It's different. New Jersey isn't quite like any other place. I have to say that.
Right. And of course, like a lot of writers, you know, apart from obviously your girlfriend, you got these cats there.
Yes, I have a cat army. I originally started off with two cats, and then she brought two more to the picture. So we have quite a brood or a coven, depending on how you look at them. And it's Oedipus, Electra, Abra, and Mushy. And got two British short hairs, a Maine Coon, and then a Calico.
Wow. So you got a good mixture there.
Yeah, you know. It's kind of like college. Someone's always puking in the hallway, so.
That's cool. So, I mean, when you started, what did you sort of come up with the idea of writing the book, or did you sort of sit down and think, well, yeah, I'm going to write a book. What can I write about?
It's a little of both. I've kind of learned through the process of this. I've kind of realized that in a lot of ways I was looking for some sign that there was a way out of the situation I was in. And I think kind of coming to the pages like that, what came out was Mike Brody and this notion of a person that just never quits, no matter how poor the odds or what the obstacles are, you know, thrown at him.
Yeah, I mean, your hero, Mike Brody, I guess that's got some of you in it along the way.
Yeah, it's more that parts of me that I wish I had, you know. <it's laughs> kind of like the ideal me. He's also an amalgam of you know, I think a lot of different people is the, you know, the product, my writing's the product of everything I've ever read and everybody I've ever come in contact with and every experience. There is some of me, but again, it's more what I'd like to be, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, people say, you know, there's bits of you in every character, but it's, you can only write from your own experiences half the time and things, you know, little bits that you put in, and all the characters have little bits of you along the way, I reckon, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, I got in a really interesting discussion with this a couple of months ago with a very successful poet, and he made the point that over time you learn to trust the imagination. You know, in the beginning, everything's rooted in your experience, but, you know, the more books you put out, the longer you publish, the more it truly is, you know, a creative work, as it were, you know, rather than a kind of a recounting and amalgamating things that have happened and that you kind of put together.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've been going on about for the last month or so, and this is my new theory, and when you talk to authors about it, it almost sounds like it could be real. But I reckon, I think it's like the string theory, I think that's what your theory is, that there's this alternate, there's this parallel universe, right? And these stories are sitting there in this parallel universe, and all they're doing is waiting for a conduit into this universe so that they can be written. And they choose an author or somebody along the way, and that's the conduit. Because what happens is you start writing a story, and no matter what you plan the story down as, these characters come along and lead you in different directions, and other characters come along, because they're all coming in from this parallel universe. And I'm sure one of these days, there's going to be a knock on authors' doors, and these characters are going to be there that they've written about, because they've just popped over from the parallel universe. You know?
It's a pretty intriguing idea. I think, do you remember which author said that?
I can't remember. No, I mean, I've had like three or four authors on the show, and we've just discussed it, because we all say, you know, when we start writing, we start writing the characters, and these, you know, you might have a plot in your head, but the characters lead you in a total different direction half the time.
Yeah, I agree. If you're doing it right, hopefully they do. You know, otherwise it kind of becomes forced. I mean, ideally, you kind of, once you get a sense of a character's internal script, you just get out of their way and let the story happen. So
exactly, yeah. Let them lead it on. You're right.
Exactly, yeah. So I guess you can put me down for one vote for the connective strings running through a parallel universe.
I think so. I mean, the only people who I found that aren't like that are like some of these, I guess, historical romance authors that churn out about one book every 2 months, you know, and they have the whole family tree on the wall, so they get the characters. This one was relation to this one and went out with this one, and you know, and they churn out these books like that. And I guess with them, it's just I can't say the same book with different characters, but you know what I mean.
That's no way to talk about Twilight, Barry.
I wasn't going to say that.
Come on now, be nice.
So from when you started your book, how long did it take you to produce the thing?
There's a couple of iterations of it. The one that's closest to the current version, I would say, was probably about 2.5 years or so. The bulk of the work was done in probably 2.5 years.
Okay.
I did play around with an earlier version of some of the same characters, not many of them, Mike and Jessica and Andy, for about 2 years before that. And I just got to a point with that story where I finally realized that I could spend the rest of my life working on it. I needed to walk away from it a little while and try and put Mike in a different backdrop, and then that made it much easier. I was able to finish it.
Well, and once you finished it, I read an interesting article that, you know, you queried like 120-odd agents, and then you came up with this idea of doing a, like a podcast thing to send out to them, like a book trailer.
Yeah, it was a book trailer. It was 122 agents, and I spent the better part of 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, something like that. And I basically went down the altar with almost down to the altar with two different agents who passed for various reasons, one of which I spent a couple of months making changes to the book based on their feedback, and only to have them turn around and pass. Although I look at that as kind of a good thing, because they had a lot of great ideas. I think what they were basically telling me was, you're a good writer, this is a good story, I just don't know what to do with it. And but, you know, after 3 years and 122 passes, you kind of you gotta start going back to the drawing board and, you know, looking at the definition of insanity as, you know, doing things the same way and expecting a different result.
I had author Sandra Mitchell on the show last Saturday. She's just brought a book out called Shadowed Summer. But she's like a film producer before, but she's gone on to this thing. She had 1,512 rejections. We were working out how many walls we could paper around the house with it, I tell you.
God, yeah, that makes it seem a lot. Yeah, I don't feel so bad now.
I mean, your idea of sending out the, the film shot sort of thing. You know,
the idea was to it was to take the book and try and, you know, encapsulate, you know, a portion of it. Maybe say the first chapter or you know, just a couple of scenes. Make it look like a movie trailer with, you know, real live action, and you know, see what happens. Send it out with the query. And then I started actually going direct, which I know everyone says don't bother, but, you know, it worked for me. So
right.
Rather
That's
than
obviously, eventually you got hooked, shall I say?
Yeah, I got picked up. So that was, as they say, a very good thing, and it made it all worthwhile. I mean, I guess the way I look at it in terms of this. I'm a big fan of Randy Push in The Last Lecture and his notion that obstacles are really – they're really not there to keep you out. They're there to keep everybody else out, and they're there for you to give you a chance to prove how bad you want to do something. So, you know, whenever there's a brick wall, you kind of got to look at the brick wall and say, well, you know, maybe there's another way around the brick wall. Here's my chance to prove how bad I want to do this.
Yeah, very true, very true. And so, you know, tell us a little bit about the book. About, you know, I did give people a quick rundown of it, but you know, obviously, I'd like to hear from you about the last track and Mike Brody.
Right. Oh, thanks for doing that. By the way, I caught the tail end, and it sounded like you were reading the you know, the liner note or whatever.
Yeah.
Some good marketing critter copy. Well, I mean, basically, then the story is, you know, I'll start back where you left off. You have a young boy who witnesses a murder, and he's a guest at a dude ranch in Montana, and coincidentally our hero happens to be to kind of arrive at the same ranch for another tour shortly after this boy is, you know, disappeared in the woods, you know, as he kind of retreats from the killer who knows he's witnessed the murder. And Mike is asked to help with the search, and as Mike, you know, tracks the killer, then the killer kind of, you know, works to find Mike and the boy, obviously.
Right.
And meanwhile, Mike's ex-wife, who's a journalist and on vacation with him, uses all her, you know, contacts at these alphabet agencies inside the government to kind of help unravel the murder and use some of the privileged information from the murder scene to figure out who it is, you know, who committed it and who the actual victim is, because there's even a question about that. They don't actually know who it is, which winds up putting, you know, Mike really between a rock and a hard place, because obviously the killer wants, you know, to find the boy before Mike does, but he's also now got the problem of, you know, people have an idea who he is thanks to Mike's ex-wife.
All right. I mean, your hero, obviously, as I said, you know, is going to be. I think you've got another book coming out with him in, so you're planning a series on,
I've got all kinds of ideas. I've got ideas for at least 7 of them.
Oh, cool.
And I am. Hey, thanks. I'm working on the another one now. But yeah, I did kind of early on. I'd hoped that, you know, people would kind of pick up and want to make it a series, and the publisher having had so much experience working at some of the big houses, was kind of always behind the idea of, you know, trying to spin it as a series or position it as a series. So even though I was a little bit, well, you know, let's kind of see how the first one does, and I go from there. But I'm working on another one.
If you've got ideas for seven, I mean, that's going to keep you busy for a while.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I do have other things that I'd like to do, not just with the series. I also think some of the characters in the series could kind of be spun off, or much like with Spencer, you know, they kind of developed Hawk and I guess Susan.
Yeah.
And depending on the book, those characters had more or, you know, less of a voice in that particular story. And I could see, you know, doing something like that. I think there's a core character. I mean, it's not just Mike, I think, that makes it work. There's also that kind of on again, off again relationship he has with his ex-wife, Jessica, who, you know, can't really understand why he keeps getting into these situations, yet she manages to, you know, somehow find herself in the middle of them. Just as everybody, as much as he does, you know.
Right.
And then there's the larger arc of why Mike is the way he is, and him trying to, you know, heal these childhood wounds have kind of driven him to make the choices that he has, and why he gets involved with cases like that.
Okay, well, time's beating us, Sam, so I'm going to hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody about where they can find more about you and your book and that.
Okay. Well, the easiest way is samhilliard.com. And I'm on Twitter. And I'm also on Facebook. All the links for that you can find on samhilliard.com. You can also find us on BuddhaPussInc.com, which is the publisher. So it's B-U-D-D-H-A. PUSSINK.com, and there's, you know, links to my site and, you know, the publishers. I've also been asked by the publisher to mention that they have some other projects coming out. There's an anthology, a poetry anthology, that's coming in October or November. And they are actively soliciting submissions for a young adult anthology.
Yeah.
So you can find all kinds of details about that at the publisher.
That's great. That's great. Anyway, thank you so much, Sam. I'm glad you managed to get here in the end. It was well worth waiting for. And thank you so much for being a guest on the program.
Oh, thank you very much for your time, and thank you, you know, for the opportunity. I'm looking to see how this turns out with all the call failing at the beginning of the call.
Good luck to, you know, to the current book and, of course, the rest of the series if we've got another seven to come.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. That was my guest today, Sam Hilliard. I'll be back on Saturday morning with, as I said, my guest. So it was well worth waiting. I'm glad Sam got here in the end because it was worth waiting for. And his book sounds one of these great books that's going to be in one of these series. As he said, he's got seven more books bottled up inside him ready to write. Anyway, until then, one thing left to say. Don't forget.
Blow away the cobwebs and stop yawning. A little cup and sorcery is magic in the morning. In the afternoon or in the evening too. Chase a pup, pour yourself a cup. Tickety-boo. Tickety-boo. Easy that night. All the coffee that makes you feel good twice. One love for two.
Bye for now.